I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I create, speak and write today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respect to their elders past, present and emerging, acknowledging that the sovereignty of this land has never been ceded. Just before we begin, a little heads up, we do discuss themes of miscarriage, grief and loss in this episode. If that brings anything up for you at all, please contact Lifeline or you can also speak to someone you trust. All right. On with the show. Hello, this is Tonce, a podcast of in-depth interviews about emotions and the way they shape our lives. My name is Claire Tonti and I am so glad you're here. Each week I speak to women and diverse voices about their stories, activists, writers, creatives, thinkers and deeply feeling humans. We're going to deep dive into the strange, the rare, the curious, the magic. And this week I have a quote for you that you might recognize. As you grow up, you'll face harder things than a cricket ball and you'll have two choices, back away and get out or step in front and play a pull shot. Just keep your eye on the ball and keep an eye on your little sister for me. I wonder if you knew or recognized what that was from. Today, I'm talking about the wonderful TV show Bluey. But more than that, I'm going to be talking about an incredible person called Mary Bowling, and you're going to meet her in a moment. Before I introduce her and her incredible podcast, Gotta Be Done, I'm just going to tell you a little bit more about this glorious TV show, Bluey, and a little bit of its history, just in case you haven't heard of this worldwide phenomenon. Bluey is an inexhaustible six-year-old blue heeler dog who loves to play and turns everyday family life into extraordinary adventures, developing her imagination as well as her mental, physical, and emotional resilience. Bluey is built around imaginative games led by the titular six-year-old and her four-year-old sister, Bingo. Dad Bandit and Mum Chili are regularly roped in with near infinite patience for familiar wails of play with us and or again. The cartoon family of cattle dogs has earned Brisbane-based creators Joe Brum a Logie and Emmy and squeals of delight whenever the distinctive theme song floats across the lounge room. And it's just so adored in our house. My kids love it so much. What I didn't realize was how much thought and research has gone into each episode. And more than that, the curious story of Mary Bowling and how she came to be creating a recap show that took off incredibly 5 years ago when she first started making it. I'll let her tell more of that story, but let me tell you a little bit more about Mary Bowling. Mary Bowling is a journalist, a mum of two boys, 5 and 7, and a kids culture enthusiast. She also hosts Gotta Be Done podcast with her friend Kate McMahon, where the two deep dive into this glorious show. Other things to know about Mary as well is that she used to be in roller derby, and the thing I love the most about her is her joy and her creativity. Mary talks in this episode about her struggles with miscarriage and pregnancy loss. She talks about motherhood and that transition, about being a creative and a podcaster, and her journey through Bluey with the themes that are current for so many of us, because so much of what is in Bluey is actually what we are living all of the time. We talk about in real detail what makes this show so special. We discuss our favorite episodes and our favorite themes. We look at the deep research behind it, talk about what it was like to interview the creator, Joe Brum. We talk about what it's like for her to actually be a voice in the Bluey universe with her friend Kate, which I just loved so much. Aside from that, this is a real, raw, honest conversation between two mums trying to figure out how to do it. I think the biggest takeaway I had from this conversation, more than the fact that I immediately felt like I met an old friend in Mary, and she actually lives in our community, which is wild, is that we need to rediscover that sense of play and silliness and wonder and joy that I think so much of adulthood kind of stamps out of us, particularly in that tricky transition through matrescence. And even as someone as joyful as Mary, who was, you know, playing in roller derby before she had kids, needed reminding of that fact. And that's what Bluey gifts us, the reminder that actually parenting is more about sense of silliness and joy and connection and what that actually can look like in your house day to day. I think we seem to know the power of play, But what Bluey does so well is model it for us in beautiful 7-minute gorgeous episodes with an extraordinary score underneath it. Anyway, here she is. Can't wait to tell you more about Mary, or she'll tell you more about her story here. Off we go, Mary Bowling.
Yeah, it's not just a Bluey. Like, I don't know what it is. It's just, yes, middle age maybe?
Oh, God.
Why is middle age so teary?
It's like a middle age, midlife unraveling. Yeah. That's how I feel. I saw a Brené Brown clip the other day that was just that, this idea that you hit middle age and it's like, whoa, what the bloody hell's happened? Mm-hmm. But I think it's a perimenopause thing too.
Yeah, possibly.
Not that we've only just met. So not that I've
Look, yeah, no, I think that's something that is definitely around.
Do you think it's also just starting to understand the fragility of things?
Definitely, like, yeah, putting kids out into the world a bit more and, yeah, I think so. But, yes, also, you know, realising that perimenopause is, you know, you spend all your teens, 20s just ignoring every health kind of consideration. Yeah. Like, oh, this one I might have to take seriously. This is so rude.
Yeah, right. I know. But I think that's for women in general.
Yes.
There's so much for us that we don't understand about our own bodies and even birth and all of that. I think we're so deeply unprepared for what that was going to be like. Mm. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your family?
Yeah, so sure.
Just like how many kids you've got and, you know, what's your life like?
Yeah. So, yes, I have a family and I have two little boys who are 7 and 5. And, yeah, that feels – I'm the eldest of 7. So I guess having kids was something that was always on my radar. And, yeah, when they finally arrived and it was quite a mission to start family life for us as well. It felt like really hitting the ground running in a way because, well, obviously you're looking after a kid 24/7, so it's go, go, go. But also having had so many brothers and sisters and, you know, always being in that family environment, I felt like, okay, well, I know how to do the kid stuff, but maybe it took a while to know how to do the emotional stuff or wasn't something I'd given a lot of thought.
Yeah, it hit me like a ton of bricks, the whole thing with motherhood completely. Yeah. So when you say it was a mission, did you have a lot of sort of struggles in that road?
I'd had a couple big miscarriages before we then had the boys, and it was at a time when I'm Victorian kid originally but had been living up in Queensland with my husband, and, yeah, especially the first miscarriage, I was already, you know, I think I was about 16 weeks, so past that time of telling everyone, you know, the real excitement kind of was already there, and it was I was playing roller derby at the time, which sounds very not relevant to then, you know, how you manage a miscarriage. But yeah, I'd had to, you know, sit out of a tournament because I was pregnant, and then, you know, because of that, hundreds of people knew I was pregnant, and then you had to let hundreds of people know, oh, by the way, yeah, that's not a thing anymore. So yeah, it did feel like, even though, you know, you put one foot in front of the other and I felt like I grieved and then moved on, yeah, once the kids arrived, I was like, wow, that was really big, losing that baby and, you know, that just stop that was put on plans and life. And, yeah, looking back now, like, okay, yeah, that was kind of the first sign of in parenting, there's a lot of things you can't control.
Hugely. I'm so sorry. I feel like our culture doesn't talk about it in a way that prepares you.
Mm.
Did you feel even physically underprepared?
Oh, complete. Yeah. It happened on a weekend and I knew I was miscarrying, and that was painful and messy. And I rang the hospital that I was meant to be giving birth at and got a very very abrupt kind of, oh, yes, you're having a miscarriage. There's nothing you can do about it. Just come in on Monday. I'm like, wow. Right, okay. So, yeah, I wasn't ready. Well, you're never ready, of course, but the way my body felt, then having to have a sweep, like it's, I guess I hadn't known anyone closely who'd had a miscarriage before, and just the procedure around it and how it's very medicalized as well, didn't feel like it was kind of what I needed at the time. But but yeah, the amount, there wasn't a lot of care around that. But what I did find was, because I eventually let most people know via Facebook, on a Facebook post, because, yeah, you got to, you know, I wanted to get the message out there and also acknowledge it kind of for myself. So many public comments, but also friends and people I'd know from, you know, all aspects of life, getting in touch in the chat as well and saying, look, it's happened to me, it's so hard, here for you. And, yeah, that sort of made me, you know, you see the stat of 1 in 4, but it was that experience that put it, well, people carry a lot and so often they're carrying it privately.
So true. And I think as well, when it comes to miscarriage and then also stillbirth, yeah, as well, oh, that, and it's all kind of seems to me, when I can see it in a more zoomed out lens, part and parcel of bringing kids into the world, yeah, and bringing life into the world. And for most, I mean, women and also people who give birth, I have this lyric in a new song. It's like the wild plane that women exist on. Mm. And I didn't know about that wild plane,
yeah,
until I gave birth. And you're suddenly like, yeah, what the actual fuck is going on with my body and myself and my emotions, which, mm-hmm, I guess is what matrescence is all about, right? Even the physicality and the violence for me of a miscarriage was really, we've gone real dark,
yeah,
real deep, real quick. But I think important, yeah, to discuss because it's part of our story and part of it all. And I guess that kind of brings me to that episode onesie of Bluey, because, yeah, we'll talk about your story and how you've created this extraordinary podcast. But I've written down onesie because it has those themes, fertility, pregnancy, loss and, yeah, grief. And Brandy is played by Rose Byrne, who's just one of my favourite, oh, actresses. Oh, my God, Bridesmaids, yeah, and, oh, she's just extraordinary. What does that episode mean to you?
Yeah, completely. It's so beautifully done. And I think so often people always want to share a story with a happy ending, right? Mm. So, you know, and that was so many of those women, for instance, who got in touch with me after my miscarriage, like, but, you know, hang in there. I've got my kid, my baby now. Mm. And yeah, what I wasn't hearing from was women who were like, yeah, it's happened to me and now I don't have a baby and I'm still trying or I'm still waiting. And yeah, that is a heartbreaking story to tell because it doesn't have that happy ending. We're so geared to wanting that happy ending. This episode, like, how brave can you be to, okay, well, let's talk about not getting that happy ending and the acceptance and how you deal with, you know, the family friction around that, and put it in a 7-minute kids show. Like, it blows my mind.
That is also really beautiful to watch. For, yeah, the kids, and they kind of absorb it in a totally different way, and, yeah, yet we're all sobbing.
Yeah, oh, man. But, yeah, definitely. There's women and family members in my life who are in that Brandy situation and have been able to watch that episode and relate and cry. But, yeah, I guess, you know, they've gotten to their they're working through their journey of acceptance. And I think, you know, it's affirming to see it. And I certainly had, you know, when I, like, after a second miscarriage, you have all those catastrophizing thoughts of, well, mm, you know, if I'm not a mother, what am I going to be? Or, you know, and, mm, I considered myself a mother at that point and a mother in mourning. But, yeah, it's a story that needs telling, and we're terrible at telling so many aspects of motherhood, but the wanting of a mother is one that, mm, I think is a nut that we might have cracked, but, yeah, I don't see it.
Very much, right? It's like that deep longing that's almost biological. You, mm, can't quite wrap your head around it. Even I feel like on Mother's Day there's a beautiful post where they sort of share for those who would love to be mothers, mm, and aren't mothers, or those who loved and lost or have complex relationships with their mothers. But that idea that maybe you just actually haven't found the right partner and, mm, you get to a certain point where it's no longer possible for you to have kids, or physically you can't for whatever reason. And, I mean, there's just so many reasons why people might have that deep yearning, mm, and not be able to. And the complexity around that, or choose not to for different reasons, even to do with our planet. You know, there's just like,
yeah,
a thousand different ways. And I love Liz Gilbert talks about how you can be a mother but not have children. You,
yes,
can be mothering a creative project or other people's kids. You can be that, you know, have that relationship with them, but it is different. And I wonder too just how honest we are about it, because the other part about it is you can have that deep longing and then it actually happens and you can go, what the actual fuck's happened to my life? And who am I? And was this the right decision? Or, you know, there's so many shades to it.
So, such a messy middle. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's been funny off the back of that episode. Funny, you know, a reflection on how we all think and operate, that as part of my very important role, I am member of so many bluey Facebook groups.
I love that,
you know, they go from everything from, you know, theorizing about the drug habits of some of the parents to to, you know, planning love lives for when the pups are grown up. And yeah, it's Bluey is my first foray into a fandom. It's mind blowing. How deep a fandom can get.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a comment you see come up again and again. Oh, I'd love to see an episode where Brandy adopts, or I'd love to see an episode where Brandy, you know, gets hooked up with the cousin and then they get their baby. And, you know, everyone's trying to
wrap it up in a bow.
Like, where's our happy ending? And it just, really reiterates, wow, there are a lot of not happy endings out there, and we're so conditioned to just expect it from all our fiction and entertainment and everything that, it's a good reminder that we can take a step back and maybe be comfortable in that really horrible kind of, it's not always a happy ending. And that's, you know, that's beyond parenting. There's so many situations where, you know, a death that you can't come to peace with
Totally. And that's life too. It's trying to accept what is unacceptable. And I guess that's also the idea of happiness is fleeting too, right? Like we all think we just will have this happy ending, because I think when we were kids, we were watching shows that always kind of wrapped up with a happily ever after.
Completely.
And actually it's so beautiful to be watching a generation of kids watch shows with these kind of complex ideas within them, and you wonder as they grow and look back on them what they'll learn. Exactly. I think that in itself is so beautiful. Just before I move on, I have another question. Did you do anything to mark your miscarriages in grief? Did you have any kind of ceremony or?
Yeah, a Facebook post at the time.
Yeah, I think that's brave and radical. I actually think that's radical and important.
And look, it's not. It's completely not for everyone. I'm an overshare on Facebook from way back.
Mate, welcome to the Oversharers Club. Tom's is a safe space. This is where we're at. Right. Yeah.
You know, it was actually once I'd had the boys and was up to a conversation with them, and this is going to sound so not bad on my husband, but I'd carried names that we weren't even advanced enough to know if they were boys or girls. But in my heart, you know, I'd named these kids and it wasn't something I'd even discussed with my husband, which probably reflects, oh, you just, you know, you put one foot in front of the other and you harden up, and that's not how I want to be, but it's definitely how I'd been conditioned to be. So, it was only once my kids were at an age where they could, like, have conversations about, oh, well, you know, what life was like for us before they were born and things like that. And they're so interested that, me and my husband had that conversation with them, that we lost these kids, and they had so many questions to ask. And, that was when I said the names out loud. And to me, that was them knowing about them and, like, other people carrying that was closure.
Yeah. Do you mind sharing their names, or you don't have to?
No. So, my first miscarriage, her name's Tess and Sebastian.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, which I don't know, like, and I don't know if that's common or done, and, like, you know, you don't want to go deep into a Google hole around grief as well. Like, how did you approach it?
Yeah, I was so shocked by it, because it was I had my son and I had the miscarriage when he was two.
Mm.
So I was actually triplets as well.
Oh.
And it was at 10 weeks. So it was quite early, but I miscarried at home. So it was a really intense experience. I ended up passing out in an ambulance.
Oh, God.
So I went into labor actually, which I hadn't, I was booked in to have a DNC, and then just into spontaneous, what felt to me like labor, because I'd been in labor with my son. So it was a really intense experience and quite shocking in it. It felt quite violent to me, almost quite animalistic, which is a strange thing to say. But I guess I say that because I feel like I was so underprepared for the intensity of it. I was told by other sort of medical professionals that it would be like a bad period, and it just is not like that at all. It was not like that for me at all. And so going through that and then having – my husband was amazing and my mum like almost flew from home to be with our son so he could go in the ambulance with me. But because I was so shocked by it, I just didn't know what to do. I didn't have any ritual around it. Yep. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any names. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I didn't know it was triplets until afterwards. So a really dear friend of mine actually gave me this beautiful garden hanging with three birds. Yep. And that – she said, you can hang that in your garden to mark it. And at the time I was so out of my body and so traumatized that I couldn't do it. I couldn't hang it anywhere. Yep. I just couldn't. And I didn't mark it with anything.
Yep.
And it's only now I've got them hanging in my garden. And that's what, like 6 years? So, and I actually did create a little mini podcast episode about it and I sang a song and just put it out. I'd only released like 2 episodes of my first show, Just Make the Thing. And then I literally just recorded this thing when I got back from hospital and just put it out. I don't know why I did that because really it was so fragile. And I've taken it down since because now I look back and think that was a woman who I wanted to share it because I felt like people weren't talking about it.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be marked and to know that it was there. And on the new record I'm making, I've written a song about it, which I am going to put out, I think. Yeah. I don't know. Courage, swallow, and hopefully – you know, I can do it. But yeah, I didn't at the time because I feel like we need more ritual. I think how glorious that you were able to do that and give them like Tess and Sebastian, give them names because I know a friend of mine, she named her baby, she's from South America and named her baby before her baby was born. And it's a real tradition there where people talk to the baby and give it a name. And then that allows you, it almost legitimizes your feeling
true,
of loss
actually.
And grief.
Yeah.
So I think that's really powerful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that story. Oh my God.
Oh, I think the conversation is changing though. I don't know if last year you read Isabel Odeberg's book Hard to Bear she's a Melbourne journalist and it was about her experience of miscarriage after miscarriage. And it's hard to bear and hard to read, to be honest, but she's done that kind of scientific journalistic approach to, well, you know, how do different cultures do it and how does the medical system handle it or not handle it, as the case may be. But in that book, she actually reached out to the creators of Bluey to ask about another episode that just hints at that Bandit and Chili might have had a miscarriage. Mm. And, yeah, the Joe Brum, the creator, came back to her with like a written kind of story of, why he chose to tackle that topic and what it meant to him. And it's in the book and it's very very beautiful to read.
Oh, I'm gonna definitely have to read that. I love actually because you're a big reader.
I'm
what I
carrier
can see
of books.
Me too. I have so many on my bedside table. I call it like the unicorn version of me that would read them. But yes, I did see you read one that I thought was so beautiful called The Last Love Note.
Yes. Have you read it?
No, I haven't, but it's on my list now because it deals with loss and then Alzheimer's as well.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry because I know you lost your grandmother and I know we're really deep diving in grief and like we are going to get into some fun stuff and
there's,
I want
to
ask you more about Roland.
To work through before we, yeah.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. But one of the themes in Bluey that I love so much is the grandparents that come through so strongly. Mm. There's that beautiful grannies and the way that Bingo and Bluey kind of embody these grannies, which is so beautiful, and the relationship between them and their grandparents. And then that episode, Granddad,
Heartstrings.
Exactly. Do you want to talk into that theme of Bluey and those?
Completely, because it is beautiful. And, you know, having done the podcast for 5 years, and we've interviewed Joe Brum a few times, like it's obvious that family just means so much to him. But, yeah, I grew up in regional Victoria and my grandparents were in Melbourne and especially my mum's mum and dad were just like mythical level grandparents. You know, mum had so many stories about their adventures growing up and then that sort of rolled on to how us kids saw them. And my grandparents had 7 kids as well. Then I'm one of 7 as well. So, yes, there's some big generations going on. But, yeah, I think, you know, not – I didn't appreciate – like my grandparents were very much – book people. They ran a bookshop, and it was a Catholic bookshop, so not the most diverse range of reading, but you know, they were always reading and always get the grandkids gathered around and be like, okay, so look, this is a book of poetry. If you can learn one of these poems, we'll give you $5. And like, and just sounds somewhat mercenary, but it was really a way that I early on connected with poetry and also was like up for a challenge. And we were all like memorizing poetry as we wandered around their backyard, you know, picking passion fruits and baby tomatoes. And it sounds very idyllic looking back, but I realize now that they were just both storytellers, and everything was built around sitting at the table and having a cuppa and, you know, regaling with stories. And that's probably the biggest part of me that's connected to family. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've connected so hard to Bluey as well, because I'm like, wow, like the stories they pack into 7 minutes. I'm like, I am not telling enough stories in my life because this, you know, look at the standard being set here. So, yeah, and my grandma died with Alzheimer's last year, and Pa had died just before I got pregnant with Bon, my eldest, and he's 7 now, and he'd had Alzheimer's too. So, yeah, Alzheimer's and kind of that experience of trying to keep the stories going even though that person's losing them in their head, like, you know, my grandma had a great line, you know, as we kind of, even once she was in a home and bed bound, you'd go in and have a chat and go, do you remember this story, and tell her? And she's like, oh, that does sound like something I'd do, which, you know, you can kind of could see the story wasn't quite there anymore, but she knew herself well enough to be like, oh, yep, that's still there.
What's one of your favourite stories that she would tell you?
One that stuck the most was once she already had probably 4 kids by this stage, and she was explaining, you know, she'd been down to the shops and the kids were home with Pa, and it was, you know, the jasmine was in bloom and the sun was shining, and she just decided to skip home from the shops. Oh. This mum of 4 kids, and there was a particularly cranky old lady who lived on their street, and she looked over the fence and was like, oh, young lady, what would your mother think of doing that, if you, you know, behaving like that? And she sort of stopped in her tracks. And I guess this was, you know, the 50s, early 60s. And she's like, well, actually, I am the mother. And just kept skipping. And it's like that just ability to tap into joy when life was probably fairly, you know, hectic, weighed down, like, you know, a lot going on, like, you've probably experienced this, the joy of getting to go to the shops by yourself.
Yeah.
It's tempting to skip, but, yeah, that you know, determination to skip in the face of judgment was just, yeah, very – I carry that with me a lot, even if I'm not quite skipping as much as I'd like to be.
Yeah, because it's that childlike nature, isn't it, of being an adult and not losing that magic, which I think is the beauty of Bluey.
Yeah.
Is that it reminds us of the power of being a child and play, and that sometimes in our kind of modern world, because of the pressures of like work and both parents often have to work to be able to afford everything and all of those things, we get weighed down, and then screens and all of that, it kind of sucks out a lot of that joy
completely
and that playfulness. And so to me, would you agree that's why Bluey hits a chord as well? It's like, whoosh, remember play?
Yes. Completely. And I don't know, have you, like, did you feel like you were still in touch with play at all, like between being a child and then having children, like, or was there a gap there for you?
So because I was a primary school teacher and I actually had a really deep passion for play-based learning and I worked up north in the Kimberleys, and I watched my friend Flick, who's a play therapist now, but she was a teacher then, use play in such a powerful way with the kids in that community, because learning for them, they just couldn't get the idea that we would just sit still and write. They'd be cartwheeling over desks and, you know, so the only vehicle really we had was play. But then, so I know a lot about the power of kids' brains and the need for them to be given loads of room to play. But interesting, so I'd bring that into my own classroom, but then once I had my own baby, I was so bogged down by the overwhelming nature of like routine and structure. And I'm not routine at all. I'm very all over the shop. Yeah. And I found it so incredibly difficult. My son was quite unwell. So I got so bogged in that I really needed to be reminded.
Yeah. Yep.
How did you feel?
So I guess I got a long tail of play in my life because I was 17 when my youngest brother was born. So oh. there was always someone to play with through my 20s.
I love that.
And yeah, I was a big kid. Like I was trying to hold on to it, you know, we like at uni and even beyond, you know, we'd go, my friends and I'd go to like a live music show or something like that. And, you know, a game of Chasey might break out and you'd get weird looks, but it was just so fun in the moment.
Yeah. Completely.
But yeah, the same, the what you're meant to be doing versus the fun you could be having. It's just, yeah, it really did take Bluey for me to sit back and think, okay, well, you know, I'm scheduling playtime for my kids and then, okay, and now that's done and put it away. We're going to sit down and have like, you know, it's dinner time so the play's over. Yeah, Bluey just models so beautifully how, well, actually, everything can be a game, but it's not just play for play's sake. It's actually the basis of the relationships you're building with your kids. And, yeah, I was kind of coming into parenting with no deep theory around it. You know, I hadn't read a book. I was, you know, certainly scrolling lots of
clickbait headlines. I'm like Pinterest, like, prams. I did a lot of like work around like what's a perfect nursery and like sleep schedules and stuff rather than
totally. But you know, you don't know what you don't know, and until the kid is in there in front of you ready to play, but you can't research how to do that really until you're actually in the moment. But actually just being in the moment, Bluey kind of helped open that up. And that's not to say I'm like running this perfect play-based household.
God, we aren't either. My God. No, but I think it's a way of being, right?
Yeah.
And it strikes me because you did roller derby. Mm. Is that part of that, joy and lightness?
Definitely, yeah. And also I think realization, because I started playing roller derby at 29.
Oh, can you explain what it is too for some people who don't know?
Yeah, so it is great. It's a sport, a team sport on roller skates. Mainly played by women, but it's starting to be a co-ed type of thing in the past few years. And, yeah, it's a team sport where on a round track there's a racer on each team who try and get around the track as fast as they can, and then on each team four blockers who just try and take them out. And so the blockers have to work together. There's lots of like grabbing each other and pulling each other around, and you're on roller skates, so the pulling and pushing is doable, but then the whacking really, you know, wipes you out. I haven't played since I had kids, so I'm a bit rusty on, you know, actual, like I couldn't take you rule by rule, but the whole vibe is just fun. You're fully, you know, padded up. You wear a mouth guard and a helmet. And yeah, especially when sort of the roller derby craze, and it's like it's from back in the 60s, but the late aughts, it really sort of started coming back. You know, it was a lot of dress up all the teams. Like I played for a team, a league called South Sea, and we were the Dolly Rogers, and it was very piratic. And
yes,
and yeah, lots of fishnets and, you know, just fun. I played in Melbourne and then took that up to Queensland with me, and that was the way I found instant community as well. And yeah, so I carry roller derby is so close to my heart. But now it means I have like boxes of dress ups that go with me everywhere and that the kids are now benefiting from. And yeah, to have had that experience that they now like, okay, well, you know, that was mum's fun thing. Like it's, yeah, I've sort of realized, oh yeah, the kids need to know I'm fun so we can have fun together.
Yeah, exactly. And that it doesn't have to have like pressure on it to be like, because also we're tired and it's stressful and life is a lot. But I agree that there's a joy and a freedom in Bluey that you're allowed to enter into the play with your kids in a way that feels good to you. And around the dinner table, like the episode with asparagus, we use that where they use the asparagus as a wand and, you know, to get the kids to eat. It's just a way of like being reminded when you're an adult and there's so much going on for you that actually being silly is like the best bloody thing for you, not just for your kids.
Oh, and also it can be the path of least resistance. Like, you know, I'm still reminding myself of this, learning this, like, we had a moment, you know, probably this time last year when my younger son, the standoffs were getting very standoffy. Like, you know, the kids sort of really start to come into their own in terms of, no, I know what I want and, yeah, no negotiation will be entered into. And so you sort of come back with the same approach as a parent, like, well, hang on, no, I'm the one that no negotiation will be entered into.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, like we got to a point where my probably 4-year-old at the time said to me, Mommy, you're using your mean voice and just, which, yeah, he's a real sensitive little soul. And, you know, the 7-year-old probably would have dealt with that fine. But to hear that, I'm like, yeah, well, it's not as though putting play to the side and trying to be serious is actually going to get you the result you want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it feels like a revelation. And I'm sure there's books written on this. I'm sure there's so much theory and academic, you know, treaties and all this kind of thing. But, yeah, to have it kind of bundled and modelled and, you know, the theories in Bluey, but also the actionable kind of processes in Bluey and, you know, a few fun lines that are going to connect with your kids if you bring them up within your own life. Like, you know, we are living this at our house and it does, yeah, I have to have a voice in my head saying, you know, lots of people say what would Bandit do, but I'm more chilly attuned, to be honest.
Yes. I love that she's come more into her own too as the season goes through. I know, because that was one bugbear I had with the first season. I felt like Bandit got to be fun and she was just always the like, I'm bringing all the swim gear and like, don't be so silly, Bandit. And that shit me. So I was like, women are allowed to be just as silly and bumbling and don't always know what's going on either.
Completely. You know? No, this season has allowed her to, really have those like, I'm not dealing with this either, but, yeah, embrace the madness kind of moments, which, relatable slightly.
Completely. Do you know one of the moments I love for Chilly is that episode, I can't remember what it's called, where it's parenting and the babies crawl, like it's when they
baby race.
Baby race. Oh, and that moment at the end when her neighbour comes over and just tells her she's doing a good job.
It's such a, oh, my gosh. And I think it's why, like you said, you know, the doing all the things and having to do it right. Like it just captures why we get stuck in this parenting doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel like we've got any flow with this. It's just all hard, hard, hard. Because, in that episode, you know, she is reading all the books. She is trying to, you know, tick off everything that she's meant to be doing instead of just, you know.
Being
it's not
with
just,
them.
It's everything. But, having just presentness and being. And, that episode was a lot of tears.
Completely. Here's a question around parenting. What do you think the power is in connection versus discipline?
Oh, well, as someone who has failed on every front to discipline my children.
Welcome to the world of us. Yep.
I'm not sure I'm the least biased person to ask, but, I think I've definitely, you know, grew up in a household that was, you know, was fun and playful in many ways, but discipline was still the most kind of, there were rules and they were to be followed and it was very black and white. And, I'm still here.
Yeah.
We're all still here, but it's, you know, and that's not to say there wasn't connection. But, I just find as a parent, when you have that choice and you've got the angel on one side saying, just connect, just reach out, just take a deep breath. Like coming in with the disciplinarian is not going to achieve your goals. And it's, to me, I've never connected with my child trying to discipline them. Like,
And in a way that's like my friend Flick, who's a play therapist, and some of the theory I've done, there's an episode of Taunts with a psychologist called Carly McGoran.
Yes.
I just love her and everything she said in that. But one of the things I always reiterate is the going back in after the whole thing's happened. So whatever, when you've lost your shit and everything's gone off the rails and all the like co-regulating and like, I'm going to be calm so you will be calm. And eventually like, just put your shoes on, we've got to go. You know, it happens. And the big blowout, the going back in after and the connecting, I think she was saying that's the most powerful thing in the repair. And I do think the more connection you have with your kids, and I knew this in teaching, it's just harder to implement when they're your kids in some ways. You know, it's almost like putting money in the bank.
Yeah.
So when you really need them to do something, if you know them and they know you, it's somehow there is an ease. But it's also like what Bluey teaches us, that bringing in imagination and joy when we can and having permission and having it modeled. So that's what Bluey does so well, I think. It just models it for us. There's a beautiful episode, Takeaway.
Yes.
And I love, there's a quote that my friend Shana actually has up around her house. Flowers may bloom again, but a person never has a chance to be young again. Oh, it's so lovely. I wanted to ask you how you actually started the show with Kate McMahon. How did you actually start Bluey? Because, like, I mean, with lines like that, you can't almost, you just have to go and debrief with someone about how you sobbed for an hour, you know?
Completely. Yeah. And so we're 5 years on in the podcast. Bluey, yeah, Bluey's been around for 5 years last October. You know, and it kind of seems like, well, like, obviously everyone's talking about Bluey, seems very, you know, debriefing on Bluey is just what we all do now. But yeah, when we started the podcast, it only been, maybe Bluey had been around for 4 months and to very little acclaim or announcement or anything. Like, you know, the creators weren't doing interviews. There was just kind of there was Bluey and this silence around it of how this magic was happening. So yeah, Kate and I went to uni together. We're both journalists and I was on mat leave at the time and she already had two little kids and was, working her comms role. And we were just finding, you know how when you're in the trenches with kids, like in those early baby days, you know, so much of mum catch-ups can just be like, okay, and how's feeding going and how are they sleeping? And it's just the checklist, which, you know, needs to be discussed. We all need to debrief, but at the same time, not the most joyful conversation, maybe.
No, no, no.
So we were finding by the time we got to, oh, and did you see that episode of Bluey? I'm like, okay, this is where the joy is. We're going to run with this. So, yeah, we'd never made podcast before. But, yeah, we were kind of just saying, okay, we'll just meet up, we'll pick an episode and we'll just go through every single bit because Kate's a real music buff and the music in Bluey is just beautiful. And, yeah, she's sort of had classical training and that whole background of, yeah, where music comes from. And I was just like, oh, it sounds so pretty. and then we're both like grew up in the 90s kids and within, you know, even just the backgrounds of Bluey or some of the lines, there's so much you can dive into that's kind of planted for the maybe millennial parent, which thank you because, yeah, it makes it so watchable and rewatchable. And yeah, 5 years later, I'm probably at the point where I've watched every episode of Bluey like 1,000 times. Like, it's,
wow.
And I'm not sick of it. I would still just sit down and like getting my kids to watch it. I'm like, oh, you know, it might be time for Bluey. They're like, Mom, that is your show.
What are the highlight reels where this podcast has taken you? Like, what are the things where you're like, I cannot bloody believe that this is a thing I've got to do because of this show?
Well, it's, yeah. So to start, just getting to talk about, like, it's been, you know, the point of connection with me and Kate. We've been friends forever, but having a schedule to meet of like, oh, we will catch up and we'll talk. And, you know, you don't just talk about Bluey. It's all our lives and all the mess and everything else that's going on. But you've probably found this in your own podcast. Podcast relationships are real.
They're real and so special because it's, you're so present.
Yeah.
You're so present. And you do, in this funny way, connect on this really deep level. I've found that with guests of the show where you have these conversations that are like, I just treasure forever because it is like a, it's not, we just don't do it so much anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Really so, sit and really listen.
Yeah. So that's been a non-Bluey related highlight and made me go, okay, no, scheduling friends is a very good thing.
Yeah. Yes.
But also, yeah, so from when we started within our first few episodes, some of the creators got in touch with us and said, oh, you have a podcast about our show. This is like, hi.
Oh, and so special.
And that was so lovely. And it meant that having launched it in March, by June, Kate and I, our families had decided to go on a holiday to Queensland together. And, yeah, we got to go and visit Ludo Studio where Bluey's made and meet so many of the animators and, yeah, just a beautiful, joyful team of people who obviously work really hard but, yeah, just so passionate about what they do. And while we were there, we interviewed Joe Brum, the creator, who really hadn't done a lot of interviews at that stage. And, yeah, like, you know, we had half an hour. We could have just kept throwing questions at him for the rest of our life, to be honest.
What's he like?
he is so just down to earth and, yeah, just so laid back about it all. Like, it's such the Queensland stereotype, but, yeah, just complete Queenslander. You know, he talks with a Queensland drawl and it's, you know, he's just so thoughtful. And probably back then we didn't realise how much kind of research thought was going into Bluey. But, yeah, as we've interviewed him, like, over the course of the podcast a few times, yeah, he'll just sort of casually drop. And, you know, and I was researching, you know, play-based learning in relation to blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and that was why I thought, yeah, that there was an image in the textbook that had a boat. And that's how I started designing that episode. And, like, it makes complete sense. And I'm sure you, Claire, too, are, you know, if you get an idea and then you want to deep dive everything around it. And I can completely see how that just drives what Bluey is and why there's so much packed into it because, yeah,
so
it's that deep diving sort of mindset. Okay, well, if I'm going to find out something about this, I want to know everything about it.
Wow. Kind of thing. Yeah. So it's not just coming up with a fun idea or an accident that there's it's so layered.
Yeah.
What's his background like? Where did that idea come from?
So as he's not official biographer, but no, I heard him talk a lot about, you know, where, so he's an animator by trade and, yeah, Bluey was the first sort of series he ever sat down to write. So all that, you know, few decades of animation experience he put into writing it. But, yeah, I think he's said that a big part of his storytelling practice comes from playing, and I'm going to stuff up the name, not Magic the Gathering. What's the other one? Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, Dungeons and Dragons. Yes. Which, yeah, some of our friends do. And that is such a grown-up kid thing from, like, Stranger Things, that whole
adventure, magic. Yeah,
but as a kid he was doing that. He was watching Astro Boy and he was, you know, there was Foot Rot Flats was a big inspiration because obviously all of that was, like, cartoon to the TV. And then and that's the inspiration for Mackenzie, the New Zealand dog, who's Bluey's friend. Yeah, so it's been, as a not particularly creative person myself, a big part of, and the big joy of making Gotta Be Done has been just seeing, oh, so creative people, they basically just, like, it is play. Like, creativity is play. Yeah. And it feeds itself and it grows. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of talent involved as well. But that's sort of seeing the little things in his life that kind of all came together, and he's a dad of two girls. So, you know, I think we asked him early on, are you just sitting there with a spreadsheet kind of just taking notes on everything they say and, yeah, that'll be used in that episode, and, like, is it very ordered? And he didn't really give us a straight answer on how he collected all this information to then put into Bluey. But, yeah, to me that's the real charm of Bluey, that the kids and the weird things the kids say, and they're just so unique reactions to things, are so real to life.
You can, and that's what's so special. I totally agree. It's the honest kind of, it just feels exactly what it's like to parent these little unique beings.
Yeah.
And the most hilarious moments are the ones that, like, aren't big in some, like, fancy party or something. It's just, like, literally around the kitchen table at a certain point someone comes out with something on their head. Mm. You know, like, I was watching my son sleep last night and he has this blanket he got given that has a head in it. Yeah. I just watched him sleep. I know, weird. Most of them, and I also smell his head still. He's eight and I'm like, bye. And he's like, what are you smelling my head for? Anyway, so weird. But he's got this, like, blanket that has a little bear head in it and little bear paws that he can tuck himself into. And so he's sleeping with this little bear head on with his paws. He's got, like, his blankie up one side and then he's got, like, a tiny little monkey called Steve that he's had forever, like, the other. And he's, like, halfway down his bed and he's snoring. And I'm just watching this kid thinking, you are just so strange and so magic. And that, I feel like, is what they then bring into their grown-ups.
Yeah.
Like, you're allowed to be strange and weird and funny and awkward and silly and magic.
Completely.
And it breaks my heart because I often think as adults, people start to bring in these representatives of themselves, of who they think they should be.
Mm.
And it's sort of, I find it hard to connect with them sometimes because I think we're all creatives and all creative beings in different ways, but some people have it beaten out of them that now I'm a grown up. and I talk about tax returns and I talk about furniture from IKEA, and everything is hard and intense and important. And the only time I can be silly is if I have beers with friends on a Friday night or something.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, love some beers on a Friday night.
Yeah, but just take that bit and forget about the tax return.
Exactly. There's something actually I've been doing which I think you might resonate with. Like there's this group of mums in our community and we live in the same community. And we've just done nights out where we do dress ups. Or like we had a night away over summer all together with just mums and people bought dress ups and then we all changed outfits like five times and just like sequins and like silly board games and it reminded me of what you talked about with the roller derby, because then if our kids can see us doing that too, how fun. What a fun way to like exist in the world.
Completely.
And that's modeling a joy of life, because as we know, and I think what you see in the show, and then there's that brilliant episode you do with like the three people who are researchers.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Molly Scott, Aria Gaston Panthanaki, and Doug Pfeiffer.
Yes, yeah. And that was just, I was in my happy place. So my day job is I work for a university in comms. So, yeah, so often, you know, I'm talking about academic research and, you know, what people are finding out there and how to break it down and bring it to people. But talking to these guys who are academics in play and development, like they are based in America. They'd sort of, you know, found Bluey and reached out to the podcast saying, oh, we talk about Bluey a lot actually, so we could do that with you. But their perspective on Bluey was like, we have just spent all our academic lives, like, you know, finding out this stuff about the best way that kids can develop and how play can connect and everything just, you know, works better with play. And how do you get everyone to know that? And it turns out you just put it in a 7-minute show and, you know, make it, send it around the world and everyone will love it. And that's how. It's just, it's mind-blowing from that perspective of, the research is happening and, tiny people in – not tiny people, they're normal-sized people.
Oh, man, I just love the idea of tiny little people in, like, tiny little houses.
Normal-sized people in tiny rooms all over universities everywhere. And, you know, universities aren't the only places that knowledge is made. But that's, you know, that's a lot of funded activity saying, okay, we're going to fix the world by these people finding out what we need to do life better. And it is so hard to then get that out to – so everyone knows how to do life better instead of just, like – blindly feeling their way, like I have certainly felt as a parent many times. But, to have a vehicle that is so accessible to the parents that primes the children for understanding what the parents are trying to achieve and then maybe even, you know, fitting in and just...
And modelling it. Yeah. Modelling it in a way that you can actually see, because you could say to someone, play is really important.
Yeah.
But what does that actually mean? Like setting out some blocks? Like what do you mean? Just like keeping them off the screen?
Yeah.
What does that actually mean? But seeing the parents involved in their kids' play in that way. Or the other thing is allow... Like I had some really great advice where... Sometimes we're so bloody, I was going to swear, so freaking exhausted by life and what we're trying to achieve. But actually sometimes just not being on your phone, sitting in a chair and just observing your kids play is enough for them. Like they just want you to be watching them. Mm-hmm. And that's I get, especially in lockdown, did a lot of that. Oh. You know, just with a cup of tea. But then, like, they might ask you to play with them and I think they model that in Bluey too.
Yeah.
They're not always playing. The parents aren't always interacting.
Completely.
But just you're kind of there to observe them.
Yeah.
And that feeling for them is great too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Joe Brum has said a few times that actually the research says that kids playing together is the best formative development, not kids playing with the parents. But it's funnier for Bluey if the parents are involved, so we involve the parents. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. But I think so much of parenting has been Instagramized as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, I see so much, and I've certainly done this for my kids, and I don't think it's a bad thing, but, like, setting up a play tray that you then, you know, carefully
curate,
design and film, and then you let the kids at it kind of thing, and there's nothing wrong with it. Like, it's kind, it's thoughtful to your kids, but at the same time, just letting the kids lead. My boys have this game at the moment that they're obsessed with, that every night in the shower they'll say, oh, Mum, we need more face washes. And then once I've delivered, like, you know, up to 10 face washes to the shower. They put the face washes around each bottle of shampoo or conditioner or whatever, and then put a little like cup on each head, and then they're mystical magicians and they play out like this elaborate game, and the, you know, the ducks are the baddies, and it's so like, it sounds so ridiculous to say it out loud, but they are so immersed in it. And yeah, you didn't need to set anything up. You just put them in the shower, and every kid has this inside them, but actually just finding the space to let it happen, because I've certainly rushed my kids out of the shower before. I feel like I'm rushing them everywhere. Oh, so yeah, it's me seeing that happen. It's like the reminder I need to, like, okay, just let it happen.
Yeah, completely. It reminds me of my friend Dan Steele. I'm just like reeling off people I've interviewed. Anyway, he's a primary school teacher and now he's a principal coach. So he coaches principals. Mm-hmm. But he was telling me about this beautiful bit of research, and I can't remember who it's from, where you need to just give up the ghost around getting them to bed. Because there's this real frustration and tension in our house where it's like, can you just clean your teeth? Can you put your pajamas on? Okay, now we got to have a bath. Can you get out of the bath? Okay, we're just doing two stories. Can you get into bed? And they just do everything they can to postpone the bedtime, and you're in this tussle. And Dan was saying, actually what you just need to do is accept the fact that they're looking for that last bit of connection. Mm-hmm. You're never going to get them to get into bed until – like they're going to get into bed. Yeah. And if you accept that it's just going to take time, and I know you want to get to the couch so you can watch, I don't know, whatever it is, Game of Thrones or Bluey or, you know, your TV of choice, or just have that bar of chocolate that you've been hanging out for all day because you just want that tiny bit of precious time for yourself, and then you end up falling asleep next to them or something. Yeah. He said, like, because I was every night I have this like, oh, it's bedtime. All right, come on, guys. Next thing, tick, 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 tick off the list. And he said, you just have to accept that's the last bit of connection they want with you every night. They're not going to want it forever. And it sucks because you want some time by yourself and you've had a long day, but you're not going to change it. And all you're doing is battling.
Yeah.
So maybe you just accept it.
It's so hard to know what is, you know, the line between good parenting and giving up.
Yeah.
But if they can just join together, then yeah.
Exactly. I know. And then in my head I'm like, but is that just like a lack of discipline and just letting them run? And they do have to go to bed like they need to be in bed at 8 o'clock or, you know, whatever time to get sleep. But I did love that idea and I've practiced it in my own life now and I've found it easier. It's not that I'm like, great, stay up till whenever. Yeah. It's more just understanding why they're stretching this out. My son's always like, just another glass of water. Oh, I need to go to the toilet again. Oh, can you tap my – yeah, can you grab my extra, I don't know, Chewbacca toy? Yeah.
Kate shared a similar story that was a good piece of advice she got early from you might know the author, Kemi Netkeville, Kate sort of connected with her through work at the stage where I think she was pregnant with her first little girl, Olivia. And Kemi already had kids and lots of good advice to share. But, yeah, her very succinct advice was like, look, you know, just one thing to think about. Don't be weird about vegetables. Like, and Kate carried this. Like, yeah, like, you know, if they don't eat something, like, it's not the end of the world. Just don't be weird about it. And I'm like, I just have that voice inside me now so often being, am I being weird about this? Like, actually, why am I obsessed with that particular food being eaten on the plate before you leave the table? How has this whole, kind of
thing become a thing?
Industrial complex developed. And, what is weird here? Maybe just go play.
Right. Yeah. And I think that was the joy I found in parenting my second daughter because with my son I'd read all these books that were like save your sleep or something, and it was like minute by minute military precision. Am I doing this? I'm not doing it right. Yeah. And he's not sleeping. And it's all my fault. And with her I realized I'm like, she's just going to sleep how she sleeps. Mm. And in the end I can fight it or I can cuddle her to sleep. Yeah. And she can sleep in my bed and who cares? And rolling with it and trying to just roll with more of it. And we've cut back on extracurricular activities heaps, which I don't know, in the end he's not going to be necessarily a virtuoso pianist maybe. I don't know. Just giving them more time to play, I think, and B, we're trying to kind of build that in. We go for like long walks during evening time now with them sometimes.
Lovely.
Just because the sun's going down and we were battling them into bed and now that's kind of added a bit of ease. I'm conscious we've been talking about ageism. I could talk to you forever, but I do have. Oh, it's so lovely. I wanted to talk about some specific episodes.
Okay.
But first, I just wanted to briefly mention this amazing thing you shared on Instagram. It's that sketch from SNL, the Bee Gees sketch of Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake, where it says, if you don't cry in Bluey, you're not a real man.
See, this should just be the tagline of Bluey from the start.
Yeah.
And manhood. Manhood needs a new tagline.
Oh, so, yeah. Doesn't it?
Let's get everyone on board.
Exactly. And, okay, so I want to talk about the cricket episode.
Okay.
God, why is that so amazing? Tell me about it.
Okay, so cricket is the most recent Bluey episode that we have received. It's the story of Rusty, who is one of Bluey's little friends and Joe Brum's favourite character, which is good intel to have. So I think he built up to this episode for a long time. But Rusty loves cricket, and in the course of a game of cricket at a birthday party, the story gets told of how Rusty actually developed his amazing cricket prowess, and it's because his dad's serving overseas in the army. So, you know, he's spending a lot of time at home or at friends' houses when his mum can't pick him up. And just so much detail. It's almost and I'm blanking on the name, the film about the Indian guy that wins Slumdog Millionaire.
Everything that happens
in the game on the field prompts a flashback of, well, why did Rusty smash that pace ball out of the park? And there's a lot going on. The team at Ludo is also educating the whole world about how cricket works. At one point, a little diagram pops up of where Slip and Gully are.
That's so true. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. God, they're so clever.
So there's a lot going on. I don't love cricket. So for anyone thinking, why is it this episode about cricket that's so beautiful? It doesn't have to be about cricket. It's about how a kid develops both a love for something and passion for something, basically. And then, the episode builds to a climax of Rusty achieving in the cricket world, basically. And it's a flash forward, and flash forwards in Bluey are always very emotional because, did you know, kids grow up and they can't deal with it.
I know. Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it's just a stunningly told episode. I have a Bluey podcast. My sister, who's a teacher as well, actually has a Bluey meme account on Instagram.
Oh my gosh.
And she's in the throes of wrangling a newborn at the moment. But she actually has had a bit to do with the Resilience Project. And she actually mapped the episode in a blog about how everything Rusty does and experiences is in lines with the resilience building model in the Resilience Project. So he's got, you know, he's grateful to be able to play cricket. He's, you know, empathizing with the other cricketers around him, even though they're not as good, and he's helping them. And I can't remember what the M stands for in GEM, but anyway, magic maybe.
Yeah, magical. I think so. He's so magical. Even at the end when he hits that ball up and so his little sister can catch it.
Oh, yes, that is a key moment.
No, and then you also see that flashback to him at the beach with his dad playing cricket, and you realise his dad's in the army.
Yes, yeah.
It's so clever, and it's such a short episode.
Yeah.
7 minutes or something, and they managed to take you on this. I watched it again today in preparation for the episode, and I was just like, sobbing.
That is commitment to the cause.
Oh, always watch a Bluey episode.
I'm so interested in, did you bring a cricket understanding to this episode? Are you a cricket fan? Or?
Well, it's interesting because my dad was a big cricket fan, huge, and my brother is. And my dad passed away 10 years ago this year. And during the eulogy that my brother gave, he ends it with, and I'm going to butcher his words, but it was something like, and dad always said, always protect your stumps. And that was his kind of metaphor for life about a dad parenting my brother. And it was very different for me because I wasn't that into cricket.
Yeah.
But dad had this incredibly terrifying fast-paced bowl, and he wouldn't go easy. And that's why that episode meant so much to me as well, because I remember that as a kid, it's terrifying. And my brother said that in his eulogy, that was dad's way of parenting. He just would throw you in the deep end, but then you built this resilience.
Yeah.
So even with learning to drive, that was kind of how he taught us. You jump in.
That's a high risk
it's
strategy.
Terrifying and high risk. And sometimes I'm like, what were you thinking? One time I remember he, like, I'd been driving for, a month or something, and he got me to pull into the emergency lane on the freeway, and then he's like, okay, you're going to merge.
Oh.
Get back into traffic. So terrifying. And actually, in hindsight, terrible parenting in a lot of ways. But that was Dad. He was very much about throwing you in the deep end and seeing and helping you to swim, but also not compromising. And that, and I think sometimes where we cuddle kids so much, and don't get me wrong, cotton wooled my kids too, but that episode, I love that idea that his brother's friends didn't go easy on Rusty.
Yeah.
They did the hard cricket ball, they threw it hard, and then he got hurt, but he stepped up. And that's it means a lot to me, that episode.
Oh, that is beautiful. Yeah. And, always protect your stuff. That's a pretty beautiful kind of, line. The line in the episode that the dad, who's voiced by Anthony Wiggle, writes home to Rusty, is that you're going to face harder things in life than a cricket ball. You've just got to step forward and play a pull shot. It's funny. My 7-year-old has become very into just playing cricket in the court, and we live in a court, so it's like we live our best 80s life, to be honest. It's very old school. But, if a game of cricket breaks out, and this is sort of what's happening in this episode too, everyone's going to be at different levels and abilities, and you kind of, it is really working together and kind of empathizing with your other kids and making it work for them. And, maybe the big kids are bowling a bit of pace, but they know now how to go a bit easier on the little kids. And I think it all goes very well in this episode, and no one's head gets knocked off by a fastball or anything like that. But, it really does, the message for the kids is inclusion. Mm. And, the message for parents, I don't even know where to start.
I know, it's so many layers, isn't it? It just reminded me, my son loves cricket, and he's so sad that the season's over, which I really wasn't expecting. And it's just a good reminder for me to actually get out there with him with the ball,
I've done it through gritted teeth, and I'm still not at the point where I'm saying, let's write off our whole weekend taking you to a field somewhere so you can stand on it. But Louis has definitely made me think about, the things people are passionate about. Like, I've always been a bit dismissive of cricket, for instance, or music that I don't like, or sort of define myself by my interests. But actually kind of realizing, people are interested in other things because they are also fascinating, and perhaps I should be a bit more open-minded. So, I'm starting with cricket. We'll see where it goes.
Okay, so I'm really curious, what is your favourite episode of Louis? I know that's a very obvious question.
Well, actually, Kate and I are in the same boat because we just nailed our colours to the mast quite early. There's an episode called Bike, and it was from the first season. It was the first episode I ever saw, and it's just the full package. So for people who don't know it, it's set in a park. Bluey's trying to ride her bike without training wheels for the first time and struggling. But then she and Bandit kind of sit back and see that every kid in this park is struggling with something, and the only way they're going to be able to do it is persist. And Bingo, the little sister, her point of persistence is trying to push the button on the bubbler, but then also get around the other side to drink the water before the button comes out. And it's just like the most, things are not, design is not done with toddlers in mind. That's just hilarious. But this episode also has Beethoven's 11th, maybe? It's Ode to Joy as the soundtrack. And we've interviewed the composer, Geoff Bush, who does all of Bluey's soundtracks or scores, about this and about all of the music he does. But the score starts as like a beginner trying to kind of feel out Ode to Joy on the piano, and then just throughout the episode as all the little dogs are getting better at what they're doing and building their resilience and hitting their walls and getting back up again, it just builds to a full orchestral kind of lift and voices and beautifulness. And I cry every time, and this is probably the episode I've watched 5,000 times. And I even, at one point got me and a friend decided we were going to get Bluey tattoos. So Bingo pushing the bubbler is my Bluey tattoo. Oh, I don't know, it's just, it's such a simple way to kind of paint resilience and paint, just determination. And, it's kind of what every kid needs, but what everyone needs. Maybe. It's what I need.
It's totally what I need. And I think that's part of it. It feels like medicine for the soul or something.
Yeah.
When you, it ties it together and you get to the end. I think for me there's an episode, Bumpy and the Wise Old Wolfhound.
Yes.
Oh. Could you tell us about that one?
Well, I'm definitely going to ask why you connect with it. But, yeah, so it is a beautiful – it's the story of Bingo being in hospital, and you don't know why, but she's there with Chili, her mum, and then they're obviously upset. They've just heard they have to stay in for another night, and then Chili gets a message on the iPad that back at home, Dad and Bluey, and it turns out all the kids in the neighbourhood have just sent them a video, and it's a video – they've made of a play called Bumpy and the Wise Old Wolfhound that tells the story of a puppy dog getting sick and how a community comes together to try and make it better. But, yeah, I think ultimately about acceptance and the realisation that everyone gets sick sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's I love that episode. It's probably my favourite one because my son was in and out of hospital a lot when he was little. And the story is so sweet and fun. So the kids love it because he's like this idea of the purple underpants and that whole thing is so funny. But that line at the end that everyone gets sick in different ways. And I think when I was going through it with my son, he was so little and we felt really alone because we felt like most of my friends who had kids and there weren't that many weren't experiencing life the way we were. And we were lucky. It wasn't an incredibly serious illness compared to what other parents go through. It wasn't cancer or anything like that. But there was a long period where we didn't know what it was. So it was a lot of diagnosis and a lot of roads and being in hospital and that hospital setting being so tricky. And so the idea of everyone coming together to support them and then saying, actually, it's okay, you're going to be okay, everyone gets sick, and accepting that, you know, they weren't alone in that meant so much to me. And I wondered if you still have kids who have, you know, illness or disabilities, all kinds of things. I just think that what a precious episode.
Oh, completely.
To make.
Yeah, I think, and that's something we talk about a lot in the podcast as well, because Kate, my co-host, is very open about the fact her eldest daughter has a genetic disorder, and then there's been kind of health challenges with her younger kids as well. And yeah, just that time in hospital, like, yeah, it's so, you know, seeing this episode through her eyes, and then there's another episode called Early Baby that, you hear from a lot of health professionals that they're actually prescribing watching Early Baby to families who have had a preemie because the message that, you know, how strong you have to be to go through that experience is just so just lands and is so meaningful to so many families. Yeah, you can tell these episodes, you know, are coming from lived experience, right? Like you can't make it up. But yeah, it's, I don't know, just I guess the making an episode like that runs a bit of a risk in that people have got trauma associated with those things. Is it going to be triggering? Like how do you see that episode from all your experience, like, you know, walking a line of affirming rather than confronting?
That's such a good question. What a good interviewer you are. I think that's the brilliance of Bluey, right? Because it's done in such a playful way.
Yeah.
And a joyful way. It's supportive. And you feel like, yes, it taps into particular experiences, but at the end, which is I think the joy of Bluey, makes us feel less alone.
Yeah, completely. And like that particular episode, the thing I love is that they've just dragged in, you know, uncles and aunts and, you know, like so much of the, you know, the stories and the success, you know, when the healers have success, it's because of the people around them as well. And it really holds up that community as this is a solution for us. Like this year, if we work together, if you're connecting with people, and which is hard, you know, it's, if you don't, like you say, you know, not everyone's got the same experience. So, yeah, when you're in hospital, no one else is getting, you know, what's going to be useful at this point. But there's an episode I love where Bluey meets another little girl in the park and they make instant friends, and it takes the little girl's dad and Bandit quite a bit longer to sort of start breaking down the barriers and interacting. But, yeah, I love that about Bluey, that I love community. I'm not the best person at building community, and I've had to like come out of my shell a lot to do that. But yeah, even as Bluey saying, look, like life is easy if you've got immunity. And, you know, it's still not easy, obviously, but it's something to aspire to. But also, here's a sweet little episode about how you could start to build it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you, Bluey.
Completely. And I do think that's the key to so much of our parenting challenges, which is what Bluey does, is model how much easier it is when you're parenting with other parents.
Yeah.
Community together, and how much of an easier load that is. And I do a lot of work on matrescence. I'm trying not to bring it up in everything I say.
Bring it on.
But that is one of the things that we've lost in this isolating way that we live often. Mm. Back in the day, when a woman gave birth, she'd have 15 other adults around her to hold the baby. Yeah. And then that's so shared. Mm. So the load is so shared. And, you know, women can like just lie in bed for 40 days, like in China and in other communities. Yeah. India is the same. They do that in Ghana. I spoke to this beautiful woman from Ghana who was saying she didn't have any loss of identity or sense of self when she became a mother because she'd seen people give birth. Everyone was breastfeeding around her. All the women were sitting outside with their kids. Yeah. So she just slotted in and people held her baby. She played with other kids and it was this sense of everyone playing, caring, lifing, washing clothes, cooking in this sort of, and it's not obviously loads of problems as well. Yeah. It's not like a perfect world. But in terms of your sense of identity and self, I do think that there's a real lack of community and support around women. You have to be really lucky if you give birth and you have two people other than your husband who can come and hold your baby. You know, like you have lots of friends that come and go, but it's not living day in and day out, you know, in that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Was that your experience?
I count myself lucky. I had good friends who were having babies at the same time as me. So that was really beautiful. And then on my husband's side, my sister-in-law had kids and was very much in the handing down of the things. I think we were in it. We'd been home for one day and she arrived unannounced with like one of those electronic rocker type things.
Perfect. Genius. She's like, the best thing ever.
Okay, so you don't know that you need this yet, but you're going to need this. And so, you know, that kind of, like that was just a gift. And I can't imagine how many hours of, you know, Instagram research that saved me. But, yeah, I think because of, you know, how I'd grown up in my family, I didn't lose sense. I felt like I knew what was going to be involved. But, yeah, certainly finding where to fit as the kids got bigger was the boys got older. And, you know, so much of how you interact with other families and other parents as well, are we on the same page in how we're doing this? Which I feel very like we don't have a philosophy we're attached to. We're kind of just
rolling with it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think so often, like I was definitely feeling it was that, you know, voice inside me of like, well, am I doing this right to take this out of the house? Like, am I doing this enough to be able to then, you know, connect with that person and have them accept me? And yeah, it's so much pressure's put on post-baby time where you're trying to build that community. And once they're starting school, it's like, well, I have to be friends with these people for a long time, so I've really got to get this right. And it doesn't end.
No, it's a moving feast. And I've heard friends of mine have got kids who are in their 30s and 40s are like, it does not end. It just changes.
Great.
Yeah, so that's good to know. It's hard, but in a different way. I'm like, oh, my God, Cheryl, don't tell me that. That's mortifying. Okay, I wanted to finish with two things. So I'll ask you one and then I'll ask you the last one. Mm-hmm. Of all of this Bluey talk, of the 5 years that have gone on, what has been the most unusual, surprising, magic thing for you?
Look, can I split two?
Totally can. There's no rules. We're playing here.
Okay,
you know?
So I've always been a podcast listener and I feel like especially as I had babies, I was listening to podcasts where it was people having conversations because I wanted to be in those conversations and that's like Chat 10 Looks 3 was very much, you know, in the background for so much of my early baby years because I'm like, there's still culture out there. I can almost touch it. Thank you. Talk to me about it. But, yeah, to then start one of those podcasts about something that so many people already connect to, just the generosity and the vulnerability of people who would reach out and say, okay, you said this on the podcast and this has happened to me and this is what I've done and just people connecting even with each other over the podcast as well. Like you know, in theory, that's why I started a podcast, but it did not occur to me any of that was going to happen. So, yeah, having what feels like a community and people who email us every week or, you know, are really active on our socials and things like that. And we're not doing anything for them apart from usually maybe once a week putting out a podcast, but sometimes absolutely not. that's been so surprising and beautiful. And, you know, if you sometimes get a bit in your head and, like, I've very much grown up, I was a homeschooled kid, for instance, so, you know, grown up with that identity, but I'm different to everyone else. And it's hard to shake that identity. But, yeah, actually, yeah, I think there's a lot of sameness about a lot of us. And, yeah, finding that to connect over is so beautiful. On the other end of the scale, there's an episode of Bluey where the family go to the library, and that episode's called Promises. It's about how society functions at a high level, but also it's a very cute story about, you know, why you have to bring back your books and why you have to take turns on the flying fox. In the library, there's a dog who says four words to Bandit, and I am that dog, and another dog that helps Bandit get a book down from the shelf and says another six words, and Kate is that dog. And, yeah, that is just, yeah, we did not set out to be part of Bluey when we started the podcast, and now we're there in what people call the Blueyverse, and, yeah, that is mind-blowing to me. And we recorded the voices as Melbourne was going into, like, its sixth lockdown. And, you know, everything was sort of about to shut down, like, kind of at 6 p.m. that night, and we just snuck it in, and it just felt particularly miraculous or unreal even. Like, is this really happening? What's going on? And then back into lockdown, and then, yeah, 12 months later, there we were in a library in as dogs.
What are your four words? Do you remember?
Yeah, so it's a confused voice. A confused sound was on the script. So I was like, can I help you?
Oh, yes. Yes, you can. You can help everyone understand Bluey. That's so perfect. I love that so much.
Well, oh, Kate and I so have theorised that perhaps we were put in the library because we're so committed to research, but our research is pretty patchy at best, actually. So perhaps it was like, do your research, get into the library. Sort it out.
Maybe. But also, isn't that such a full circle thing that your grandparents run a bookshop?
Yeah, yes. I think they had our number. Like when, because it was Joe Brum who first suggested that we might be able to do the voices, he sent a very cryptic email with like emojis in it, and there was a pile of books in the emoji, and we're already like, yes, sign us up. Whatever this is, if there's books involved. It wouldn't have mattered what it was. We could have, you know, been the baddies. We're like, yes, we will be the baddies. We'll be whatever.
So much. All right, just very quickly, do you love having chickens?
Yes, I do.
And what do you love about chickens? you have how many? Spotty, Two, Fizzy, Pogo, Dotty, Bobby and Smokey. Oh, why do you love them?
Man, you are reeling those off. I have to really stop and think what our chickens names are sometimes. But, yeah, where we live is kind of like a fairly bushy area in Melbourne. We have a backyard that has space for a chicken coop and a very good chicken coop. We had a less good chicken coop and then a fox came and, yes.
That's our area. Those foxes are everywhere, my gosh. Oh, one walks past our studio every night.
Oh, wow. Mm. Perhaps he wants a guest role.
I know, exactly.
Come on down, Mr. Fox.
Cameo, yeah.
I find chickens and anything backyard, yeah, it's just all excuses to be outside with the kids. And as a country kid, I really have realized I need to build that into life. Because if you, and same with your walks, hey, like, if you're not actually scheduling outside time, days can go past. We're like, oh, outside's out there. And, you know, I feel so much better when I'm in it, but haven't gotten out there. So, yeah, our chickens and, you know, trying to grow veggies in the backyard and things like that are very much about, right, we are going to be as connected as we can be to outside. And, yeah, so far so good.
Excellent. Oh, that's so great. Yeah, because that's it. Something I've realised recently is if you go outside, they'll go outside. It's almost like, why aren't they playing outside? Oh, because I'm not outside. That's such a simple thing.
That is a revelation.
I am just like a font of wisdom. Not going to lie. I'm just genius. Exactly.
I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Mary, for coming on. This has just been such a precious conversation. I've been wanting to talk to you for so long, and I've been such a fan of all your work and what you're doing. I want to ask you just briefly, what's next for you guys? Are you releasing more episodes? What are you planning?
We got to be done. It's been on a bit of an extended break because life. But, yeah, I think we're at the point where, okay, we're easing back in. So we have, I think, 185 episodes for anyone who's uninitiated. That if you want to listen, you could go back and listen to those.
It's called Gotta Be Done Podcast.
Yes, yeah. And it's on all the podcast platforms. But, yeah, I think we really missed not recording, and possibly I think we're going to be coming at it very enthusiastically with a lot of time to, you know, making up for lost time as well. There's probably still 20 episodes we haven't recapped, and yeah, get regular mail about those being particular people's favourite ones and what are we doing. Yeah, and frankly, those emails are right. We should lift our game. So,
well, I would like some more, so please.
Well, yes, you know, that's it. And then, you know, hopefully new Bluey episodes will keep coming at us for the rest of time, so we know how to continue to parent. And
correct.
Yeah,
exactly.
We'll be here to break it down.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Tots. It's been a joy. I've been loving watching you've got Bluey and Bingo earrings, which has just been is it Bluey and Bingo or
yes.
is it Ben? Yeah,
oh.
Good. All right, excellent. Perfect.
Love
They've been gorgeous
pups.
To watch. Exactly. Thank you so much, Mary. And go and listen to Gotta Be Done podcast on all your platforms. Totally recommend it. Okay.
Let's go. It's been a joy. Thanks.
Yay, thanks. You've been listening to a podcast with me, Claire Tonti, and this week with the extraordinary Mary Bowling. For more from Mary, please head over to Gotta Be Done podcast. There are so many episodes over there to listen back to, and she is eventually going to be releasing more too. You can email the show hello@clairetonti.com with comments, with your favorite Bluey episode, with themes or guest suggestions. Or if you would like to have me come into your community to sing some songs and have a cup of tea and talk about matrescence, I would love to do that as well. For all of my live shows and events that are coming up, you can head to my website, clairetonti.com/events. I've got lots more coming up in the works. Thank you so much to Raw Collings for editing this week's episode and to Maisie for running our socials. I'm going to go and rewatch Cricket again. That's my favourite Bluey episode, I think. Oh, there's so many. What a gorgeous show. Okay, big love to you out there. Let's figure out how we can keep bringing the joy and the play back into parenting. And don't worry, even when you lose your shit, what did we say? It's all about the repair, going back in there and trying again. All right. Talk to you soon. Tonts out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.